Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-thru locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. The past, the present, and the future of education for Alaska Native students are all interwoven, and my next guest has dedicated her career to understanding the history of how things came to be the way they are today and why they have to change. So welcome to the show, Misha Jackson Chukungi Kla. Would you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
Chukungi Kla Yuchat Duasak Chak Nachatsati Shungukedi Ayachat. I will leave my slinkit introduction there and continue in English, but my name is Misha Plunkett Jackson. I am of the Eagle Moiety. I am Shungukedi, or from the Thunderbird clan. My house comes out of the Klukwan Haines area, and that is originally where my grandmother was from, though my mother and all of her siblings and cousins grew up predominantly in the Juneau area, but come from a long history of Juneauites and life in the canneries and traveling around Southeast. So my mom is Carmen Quinto. Hi, Mom. She asked me to say that because I'm sure she told her brothers and sisters that I was on the radio. So she wants to show off that she gets a hi, Mom. They come from the Quinto family. They went to Juneau Douglas High School. My older sister went to Juneau Douglas High School. I personally did not go to school in Alaska, but you know, my connections and my roots here run pretty thick, and it's kind of just always been a passion of mine to come back and work with youth in some shape or form. I currently am the assistant professor at University of Alaska Southeast in the secondary education program. God, I'm supposed to say that.
Well, don't worry. We're definitely going to talk about that.
Okay.
And you're also the speaker for this Friday's Evening at Egan Lecture. And the title of your talk is Alaska Native Education, The Power of Acknowledgement. So it's not a long title. I've definitely seen longer, but there is a lot there. I just wanted to start with you and your story, and thank you for giving me all of that information about your background and your family. But I wanted to know what motivated you to pursue education and become a professor.
Oh, wow. Education in general, I would say in some shape or form, runs through my family roots. I personally theorize and hope to eventually research in some shape or form that I truly believe Indigenous people are natural born educators. And I think it takes a lot of time in sitting with education and understanding what's around you to acknowledge that and then to utilize that. And I think it is a strength of our community that has not been tapped into quite yet. So I would say it has probably been in me, the idea of being an educator in some shape or form, probably my entire life. I think it started a lot with coaching. And I was a basketball coach in my previous life down south. And then when I met who ended up being my husband, Josh Jackson, who's a phenomenal teacher at Harborview. He helped me realize that when I was coaching and working with students, what I was doing was teaching. And I was differentiating, and I was helping all these kids be successful, no matter what their prior skills or experiences were before that. And so we did camps and stuff like that. And it kind of put the bug in my ear that I was like, oh, maybe I am made for this. And I love kids, and coaching basketball is only a small segment of time in this town, at least. And so I joined, I got a position at Juneau Douglas High School, working for the Johnson O'Malley program, where I kind of like walked the fence between being a Tlingit and Haida employee and a school district employee. So I got to see kind of both angles. And I did a lot of support for our Alaska Native American Indian students, culturally diverse students. And, you know, my door was always open to anybody and their friends. So a lot of tutoring, a lot of counseling, helping other teachers. And then I just started sharing ideas and things that I knew and things I'd learned since I'd been back home here in Juneau. And then I realized, I think it's time for me to be at the front of the classroom. And my oldest sister was a big one pushing me towards that. And so off I went and got my MAT and kind of just hit the ground running since I already had a lot of prior experience. And I think I always wanted to get a PhD. It was a goal of my father's and my mother's to get a PhD. And so I was like, okay, like this is it. The opportunity arose to take on this position at UAS, and I applied for it. You know, it was the middle of a pandemic. Who doesn't like a good career change in the middle of a pandemic? I have 3 little kids, and needed a little flexibility, but I also needed a little bit more accountability to myself. And I truly believe there's a lot more to do. And though I love teaching with all of my heart and I love my high school students, it kind of just felt like that moment where I needed to put my money where my mouth is, kind of a saying. And as much as I missed the classroom, I needed to step up and make a bigger difference than just being a role model in front of the classroom and being a role model inside of a university.
Yeah. Well, I think you made the right choice because your passion and your enthusiasm is just so like clear. It's palpable and infectious. So thanks so much for sharing your backstory there and how you became a professor. And now getting back to your talk and the topic at hand, when you use the phrase Alaska Native education, as you do in the title of your talk, what are you referring to? What does all that encompass?
It's a totally loaded term for me. Like anybody that's been in my class knows I love to dissect and look at words and what they mean and the concepts behind them. So majority of words, if I do choose to use them, they're very loaded, very value laden. And so for me, Alaska Native education is representative of all the systems that Alaska Natives are in and actively participate in. So it's Alaska Native education in terms of what that looks like in a Western education system, you know, in terms of curriculum, assessment, standards, et cetera. It's Alaska Natives students' experiences inside of education. And for me, it's also an acknowledgement of traditional Alaska Native educational systems that were in place since time immemorial, right? And are still actively in place, sometimes in schools, sometimes not in schools, sometimes in families, sometimes in ceremonies, sometimes just out in nature. Once you really get to that point of understanding it, you truly see it everywhere.
And then there's the other part of your talk's title, the power of acknowledgement. What needs to be acknowledged and how does it lend power and to whom?
Oh, man. Acknowledgement is, I think I'll start by saying acknowledgement is like an inherent value of Indigenous communities. It is not on our poster, you know, that's out there, the tribal values of Southeast Alaska. I don't know if I've seen it in other tribal values across the state, because it is in every aspect of our lives. It's almost like one of those unwritten rules that I don't think we've done enough to make transparent to those that don't experience it on a regular basis, whether they're Native or non-Native. And so acknowledging is truly the physical part where you see somebody, you acknowledge them, and then it gets bigger than that. You acknowledge where they came from. You acknowledge who they are. You acknowledge the land that you're on. You acknowledge them as human beings. You acknowledge, you know, the commonalities, the shared space we have within this big, gigantic universe, you know, and you acknowledge that there are a lot of things in this world that we can't explain, and that's okay, right? And so for me, that's where it comes in and ties into Alaska Native education is we have to acknowledge that there's so much more to the success of Alaska Native students and the success of integrating Alaska Native pedagogy, curriculum, et cetera. There's so much more to it than what we can really put on paper. And a lot of it is feelings. And that's something people shy away from that I try to like kind of push forward. And so we need to acknowledge like that it's okay to care. It's okay to love kids. It's okay to set high expectations. It's okay to hold yourself accountable. It's okay to be honest about the history of Alaska. It's okay to be honest about student experiences, your experiences, community experiences. Like there is just so much that we aren't being transparent about, I guess is the best way I could say. So we have to learn to acknowledge all of the physical aspects and the emotional aspects and the spiritual aspects to really create safe places for our students, our families, our communities.
When you break
how loaded was that answer?
That's awesome. I was just about to say when you break it all down like that, I can see how deliberate it was to choose the phrases and the words that you did in your title, in the title of your talk, and that's just the title.
Yeah.
So
we haven't even hit slide one yet.
So, exactly. You know. Exactly. There's so much more to unpack there. It's great.
Yeah.
So you're quoted as saying that, quote, "I try to highlight how complex it has been, and that we don't have single stories from history. We have stories of resilience, and emphasis here, we need to quit portraying Indigenous peoples as victims, where we only enter history or curriculum as victims of westward expansion or climate change. Can you say more about that?
Oh, this is my, I guess, my soapbox, I guess, a moment I have sometimes about being a teacher. And I was a social studies teacher and, you know, training new teachers and just kind of experiences and conversations. And so a lot of it comes from frustration and personal experience. And, you know, I was looking, I'm always randomly looking up data and research. And I think the National Congress of American Indians did a review, a study about Indigenous education and curriculum. And in it, it mentioned that I think something like 87% of the standards, state standards they reviewed, don't mention Indigenous communities or people after 1900. And that's profound, like that. And it totally, and their report is all about like the invisibility of Indigenous people. And you know, so that's kind of where it ties into that idea of needing to be acknowledged. And so that's like my frustration is, you know, people either wait to teach about Indigenous people when it comes to westward expansion, like, oh yeah, they were on this land and, you know, now it's gone and they did X, Y, and Z and these horrible things, you know, and it doesn't bring to life everything that we have within us. It makes it very two-dimensional approach. And for people that have been living and breathing and thriving and surviving and are passionate about who they are and the land that they live on, as stewards, as caretakers, that's hard. Like that is really, truly hard as someone who's heard it talked about like that, who's had students talk about it like that. You know, you swallow your pride and you kind of have to pick and choose your battles. And, you know, a lot of times it makes me wonder, is this the reason why we don't have that many Native educators? Because we have to swallow conversations like this as we move forward, you know, and we kind of have to build that shield. And so it's sometimes a microaggression, sometimes it's ignorance and not with malicious intent, but it does happen and it does exist and it's very common.
You've touched on this a lot, but I am curious about how much your own personal experiences, whether it was as a student yourself, or as a teacher, and now as a professor and working in academia, how does that shape the way you approach your work?
Oh, man, it depends on the day, to be totally honest. It can get me so fiery and feisty and frustrated. I'm using too many Fs. Oh, goodness, all the English teachers are cracking up probably right now. But yeah, it can have me like that, those kinds of days. And then it can totally, you know, chop my legs out from underneath me. It takes a strong support network. And I have had numerous experiences, personal experiences throughout my own educational experience that weren't positive, that, you know, I got being attempted to be tracked into different math levels for arbitrary reasons. And, you know, I was just like a victim of circumstance, but thankful my father stepped up and basically broke down the system. And so I've been very consciously aware of educational systems and typically the more negative role they play and have played for me. I mean, to the point where sometimes I think of all the unsatisfactory report cards I had because I wouldn't speak up in class, you know, and that actually continued into college. It was one of kind of the common marks against me is I'm quiet in class, you know, and it's just this lack of understanding, lack of appreciation of what my strengths were. And then the moments of positive, you know, and inspiration, the Indigenous teachers and professors and that I was exposed to at my undergraduate school at UC Santa Cruz, who kind of put me on this path to where I am now, giving me a job as a course reader, helping me find different job opportunities, you know, launching me into the idea of being counseling education was one of the first ideas I went into. So I've had a lot of negative experience. I've had a lot of positive experiences. I've heard a lot of stories from students. I've had to sit in my classroom and digest a lot of things that they have experienced and their perceptions. And that was probably the one thing that was the biggest charge for me was knowing student experiences here in Juneau and knowing the experiences from my mother and my sisters.
And now, and this like moment in time, COVID-19 has thrown such a wrench in education worldwide. What are some ways that the pandemic has impacted Alaska Native education, just based on your observations?
To be brutally honest, I think it's pushed us back to being invisible, I think, is kind of what it feels like. You know, there are a lot of difficult conversations going on about education, and it came down to the pandemic really forces you as a teacher to decide what is essential to be taught. And then without levels of accountability in place, teachers will tend then to make a choice that incorporating, integrating Indigenous knowledge, current events, et cetera, histories, elders, et cetera, are not essential, right? They don't have the time. Is this important? We need to do X, Y, and Z that students missed before, right? And so it almost feels like it's kind of stepped us back a little bit. But for me, the argument is the same time is it's an opportunity to show people that the disruptions that have happened during COVID to all of our students are disruptions, similar disruptions that have happened to Indigenous people throughout history. And it's not a point your fingers kind of thing. It's like a stop and reflect and think about it. And then, you know, you need to make the self-assessment and the commitment to putting your best foot forward and really doing what our elders and our teachers ahead of us and our Indigenous educators have paved the way for. Like, it's our job to carry that forward, to be respectful of their time, their ideas, their cultural standards, the curriculum they've developed, and we can't let it get stagnant.
Mm. Well, I so appreciate you answering all of my questions, and I just wanted to ask, we haven't really dived into the meat of your talk and what you're going to be discussing on Friday. I always have this challenge when I interview the speakers ahead of time with like wanting to hear what the talk is about, but not asking them to basically give me the whole talk. What are some of the goals that you hope to achieve with your work and with some of the things you're going to be talking about on Friday?
For me, it's really creating spaces for people to self-assess, to wonder what they are doing and what they can do. And I always try and give ideas, never the answers, just ideas. I think that's pretty limiting to give everybody just the answers. We would definitely not be where we are today if that's how we approach these situations. So, you know, for me, it's always just about inspiring people to be accountable, to create similar spaces, you know, and hopefully it gets a few people to get really charged up and start, you know, being more vocal about it. I love giving these talks. This is my passion. Is it nerve-wracking? Absolutely. Does it make me vulnerable? Absolutely. But is it necessary? Yeah. Am I the only one? Absolutely not. There are phenomenal people out there that have said many things. And oftentimes I feel like I'm repeating the same thing. So I try and use my personal stories in my talks to kind of highlight and essentially translate some of the things that have already been said, so it can try and reach different audiences. But yeah, there are phenomenal people at UAS. I have, you know, amazing friends, teachers within Juneau School District and around Alaska, and people I've yet to meet that have done amazing work in here. And I'm just one small, small part of that.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, having a good social support system is really important. Well, I want to thank you again, Misha Jackson, Assistant Professor of Secondary Education at UAS, and this Friday night speaker at the Egan Lecture Series. The presentations are taking place via Zoom again this season. They're free and starts at 7 p.m. You can find out more at uas.alaska.edu/Egan Lecture and register there. Misha, what else would you like to share with our audience before we say goodbye today?
Oh, man, what else could I possibly share without getting in trouble?
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I know. I know this is all. I'm all protected on the radio is the best thing. No, I think for me is reach out, support each other, challenge yourself, challenge each other, challenge our students, and you know, have some agency and create some space and just I just want everybody to just love our kids in the end.
Well, thanks so much. It's been lovely to meet you virtually, and I really appreciate the time and all the great answers to my questions. Looking forward to your talk on Friday.
Mishish, thank you for having me.
Ganashish.